From iCare Partners, this is the Doc to Doc podcast. Clinical discussions with our team of world-class eye care professionals across the country. Through connectedness and continuing education, we help patients see their absolute best for life. Your host is Dr. Lori Preventure, a glaucoma specialist and cataract surgeon at the Cincinnati Eye Institute.
For this episode, I'm sitting down with Dr. Connie Okeke. She's an assistant professor of ophthalmology at Eastern Virginia Medical School and the lead glaucoma specialist at Virginia Eye Consultants in Norfolk, Virginia. Welcome, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you for having me. And I also wanted to just commend you on a great job that you're doing with this podcast. It's been really informative, and I've enjoyed them, so thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that feedback, and I appreciate your time. And speaking of time, I think the timing of this is perfect. So in honor of World Glaucoma Week, we're going to focus on a very tricky but widely applicable glaucoma topic, and that is patient adherence. Most of us are aware that treatment adherence is poor, but you are an expert in this area. So can you give us an idea of exactly how bad adherence really is, just to start us off here?
Yeah, well, we've known for quite some time that the more complex a treatment regimen is, this equals decreased compliance. And there's been numerous studies that have outlined this, even with electronic monitoring. But the reality is that it's even difficult with just the simplest regimen, which is just once a day. And I know this through research that I did with a study called the Travitan Dosing Aid Study. In the study, we looked at nearly 200 patients over multiple sites, the Shea Eye Institute and Johns Hopkins, and we were evaluating how well patients did with just one drop. And we had the Travitan Dosing Aid, which was an electronic monitor that could allow us to know when they depressed the lever to know that they were instilling the drop. And so what we found was that after 3 months of monitoring them, about 70% of the patient, the compliance rate or that was about 70% across the subjects. We found that about 56% of patients took at least 75% or more of the expected drops, but 45% of patients took less than 75% of the expected drops, and even 20% of patients took the drops less than 50% of the time. And so this really said to me that even patients taking once-a-day medications are struggling, and that really did change how I was practicing medicine and how I thought about patients and trying to help them with their treatment regimen. And it's part of why I think there's such a movement towards trying to find avenues to take the onus off of the patient, like things like Durysta or things like MIGS or SLT first because of these problems.
Absolutely. And it's so concerning just to hear that when they're only on one drop, because exactly. It's only downhill from there when it comes to complicating their regimen. So, yeah. And I think when you published this study, we didn't have sustained drug delivery, correct? What year was that?
No, this was back in 2009 when the study came out. So it was quite some time ago. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at, decades later, and now we've eventually had the first sustained delivery medication. And so we're looking for more. There's a lot of things down the pipeline, which is exciting to try to help our patients improve. But as we are waiting for those things to come out, we still need to work on trying to help patients with adherence to medications.
Right. So it's been a long time coming, a long time waiting on that sort of option, and we still have a lot of progress to make. Mm-hmm. You've made it very clear that adherence is a huge problem, but we also talk a lot about persistence or the ability for patients to continue with their therapy. How do patients do there?
We actually know a good amount of information from a great study called the GAPS study. This was a glaucoma adherence and persistency study that was done by David Friedman and his group. And this was the largest study looking at persistency and adherence, and they used pharmacy data from about for about 14,000 patients. And as they were looking at patients across the course of a year, how well they were in not just taking the medicine, but then refilling the medication, only 10% of that 14,000 were able to show persistence of renewing the medications. And interestingly, the study was extended to look at adherence rates and patient-doctor communication and how those things played a role in each other with some of the patients from the GAP study. And what they found was that there was certain factors that related to low adherence. Interestingly, one of those variables was patients who only knew about glaucoma through their doctor, meaning that they only got their information from their doctor. And this is compared to people who either got some of it from their doctor or none of it from their doctor. And so what that said to me was that we really still need to work on educating our patients or providing them resources to get more education. Another variable associated with low adherence was being able to understand that there was association between losing vision and taking your medication. So again, not understanding or not having the education to know that those are associated. Glaucoma equals blindness. Don't take your medicines, you can go blind. And so again, we need to do a better job on that. And there are other factors, there are other variables like cost, traveling, not being able to keep up with the medication regimen with traveling, getting samples, and also just not getting the reminder call for going to the appointment. So as we understand more about adherence and compliance and understand patients' problems with that, we also have to understand that we as doctors are part of helping them to get better. And educating them is a major area, and having better doctor-patient communication helps, because we know that when we don't communicate well, people can go blind.
Absolutely. And you're kind of already getting to this, but I really like in some of your educational material and some of the sources you reference, you break down why adherence and persistence is so poor, and you kind of group it into intentional reasons and non-intentional reasons. Can you dive a little bit more into that for us?
Yeah. So when we talk about non-adherence, we can break it into different categories. So when someone is non-intentional, these are things that you're kind of struggling with. So if someone has physical disabilities, arthritis, weakness in their hands, and they have trouble putting the drop in, that's not intentional. If they have memory issues, they have dementia, again, not intentional. We've learned from Alan Robin in his studies that patients can just not be good eye drop takers and miss a lot. And then sometimes when they miss a lot, they run out and then they want to refill and then they can't because the pharmacy doesn't, they're not going to refill it yet and they don't have the money to pay for it. Costs can be an issue. All of these things are not intentional. But then you can have on the flip side, intentional reasons where maybe they just don't understand the complexity of glaucoma and they just choose not to take their drop. Or that's an asymptomatic disease, they feel like, they're in denial, or maybe they just don't feel like they have a problem, they don't take their drop. Or maybe they are feeling kind of a fatalistic approach, I'm going to go blind anyway, so why should I take my drop? Or very commonly, it irritates my eye, why am I taking this? So they don't take their drop. So when we break it down into intentional versus non-intentional, we still need to try to come up with solutions to help them figure out how to get over those issues, to be able to help them be able to take their medications, to help them protect their sight.
I feel like I encounter those things on a weekly basis, the whole list that you just mentioned, and I'm not sure which one is more challenging. I think they each pose their own individual challenges, and you're right. Like you mentioned before, it's a team effort. It's not just the patient as their doctors. It's part of our duty to help overcome those barriers wherever we can. But admitting it is always the first step, right? And identifying it is always the first step. So how are we doing as doctors when it comes to detecting non-adherent patients?
Well, I definitely think that we can do a better job. And I will mention that in the Travitan dosing aid study, one of the parts of that design of the study was to have us as doctors, who felt we were pretty good at communicating well with our patients and understanding our patients, we assessed or kind of judged whether or not a patient was a good drop taker, that they were adherent, okay? And so we assessed that for each patient. And then we compared that assessment with their actual results of how often they were taking their medication. And when we looked at the correlation, it was all over the place. There was really no correlation. So that really, again, said to me that, I may feel like I'm really good at my doctor-patient relationships, but I may not be the best judge of what actually is happening. And so I need to just work on that harder and be a little bit more like a detective when I'm talking to patients to try to figure out what actually might be happening, especially when things don't make sense.
That's good to know. It's sort of a reality check for us, I think, a little bit, especially those of us that, like you said, we try our best to really be good communicators, but it's almost safe, I think, to assume nearly everyone has at least persistence issues, according to the study you quoted us. And then we can kind of go from there. So maybe a little bit guilty until proven innocent is a better approach.
Right.
So what actionable things can we do to help? I mean, this is a complicated problem. It's been going on for decades. There's no simple solution, but are there some things we can put into practice right away to make a difference here?
Yeah, there's actually quite a number of things that we can do. We can recognize that not every patient is the same. There's actually some work that was done by Alcon, some research they did on looking at different patients and kind of segmenting them. And they divided them into like four different categories. One was the struggler, someone who's really struggling to keep up. Maybe they have so many other comorbid diseases or other problems. And then there were people who were the skeptics, people who were kind of skeptical of this. They needed more information to really be able to assess and believe what's happening. And then you have your A plus students who are just the ones that say, okay, yes, doctor, I'll do whatever you say, doctor, and I'm on board. Then there's also the patients who are more independent and they might be a little bit more looking for natural regimens or really non-invasive regimens before really being able to dive into certain treatments. So understanding that every patient is a little bit different, we kind of also as providers need to try to also delve into that and try to come up with options or treatment plans that, you know, go along with the patient. And so after we figure that out, we also need to then just be aware and be identify when there's a problem. So if a patient comes in and their pressure's at target, but their visual field tests look off and that kind of matches their last OCT, which look a little bit off in that same area, okay, you're saying, even though you're at target, something's going on here. And so I'm recognizing that there's a problem. So now then I communicate the next step to communicate with the patient and start to dive in. This is where you start to ask questions and you start to say, are you having any trouble with the drops that you're using? Is there any problem with the cost at the pharmacy? Do these drops bother your eyes? We need to start asking questions to be able to figure out where the problem is. And then also couple that with education, which is another step. Okay, education, as I mentioned before, is so vital, and I think we underestimate that. There is actually a recent AGS position paper that came out talking about what are the areas of unmet needs in glaucoma. And one of them was education to the glaucoma, the general population about glaucoma. And education is something that's so vital because when we educate a patient to explain to them that they don't just have a pressure problem, they have a chronic disease, and it's called glaucoma, and it can lead to blindness if they don't keep up with their regimen. When we start to educate them and they understand that you need to come back, and this is a chronic thing, and even if you feel okay, you still need to come back because it can get worse. When we educate them, then they start to take ownership, and they start to understand what we're explaining to them so that they can keep up with what we're asking them to do. But we need to educate, and sometimes it's difficult to do that in the office setting. So sometimes we need to be aware of outside resources that can be helpful to the patient. And then we need to take like action when we find out, you know, this detective work and we figure out, okay, the problem is, let's say a cost. Okay, well, then we need to try to do things that help with cost, because everyone talks about cost. Either you need to be mindful of the drops that you're prescribing, that they can afford them, or that you help them with certain copay cards. They can be often in our offices or ask our reps for them. If we can't give samples, we should also look for other patient assistance programs. There's forms that we can fill out. Let people even know about GoodRx. GoodRx has been a savior for a lot of things. And sometimes if you just mention it, it could be the difference between someone being able to stay on that regimen or, you know, having to figure out a much more complex plan. So there's those things. And then there's also just trying to make the regimen not as complex. So let's say, you know, you have patient on three generic medications. Well, there are compounding pharmacies that can actually take those medicines and put them into one bottle. And that can greatly reduce someone's, you know, medication regimen to make it simpler for them. And those things can also help with the ocular surface and make the eyes less irritated. Also, when working on things like SLT or Durysta or even MIG, all these things help to reduce the complexity for a patient who's struggling. And then we also need to think about things that are, forgetfulness is common. So if a patient says, I can't forget, well, you have your phone, you can put on an alarm that can help you with remembering, or let's associate it with certain times of the day where you are doing something that you already have a good pattern with, like your other medicines or your nighttime routine or something like that. So there's things that we can suggest, and it is that we should suggest them because they do make a difference and helping the patient to be able to take it. And these things work. We actually did an extension study to the Travitan dosing aid. We took the patients who took medication less than 75% of the time, and we divided them into two groups. One group got an intervention, and the other group was told, just keep taking your medicine and we'll see you back in 3 months. The intervention group, they were given some education about glaucoma. A reminder was turned on their Travitan dosing aid device, that a reminder that beeped and a reminder that showed a light, and they were also given calls. And so all the intervention did make a difference, because when we looked at the groups when they came back, there was a statistically significant improvement in the intervention group versus stability in the group that didn't get anything. So we do know it works, and it works in the people who are struggling, because the people who took the medication the worst, less than 50% of the time, those are the ones that improved the most. So if we know that these things help, we just have to implement them.
That's really interesting to know. So the people that do the worst aren't necessarily the lost causes. They're the ones where we can make the biggest difference. And we've got so much at our disposal nowadays to be creative when it comes to making a difference and making it easier on patients. And I just try and always keep in mind that to have a disease that you have to come in every 3 or 4 months and see a doctor for the rest of your life, that alone is really hard. And to have to take a medication every day and to have side effects and things like that, it's not easy. And so I think this is such a perfect topic for World Glaucoma Week. And you're the perfect person to be talking about it. So I really appreciate your time. If you could kind of wrap us up with some of your favorite resources or things you're most excited about here, that'll be my last question for you.
Yeah, sure. You know, glaucoma education has been a passion of mine for decades now, to be honest. And one of the things that I have been kind of working on and thought and then put into action was creating a resource tool for patients. I recently published a book called The Glaucoma Guidebook, Expert Advice on Maintaining Healthy Vision. And this book was something that took some time in order to get published, but I published it through the Johns Hopkins University Press, and I wanted a publisher that I knew had a large reach, because I felt that the book was powerful. I thought a lot about the book and how I put it together, and I wanted it to be a tool that empowered patients, but I wanted it to be something that was simple for them to read, something when they picked it up, it wasn't that, oh, this is too much for me, or, oh, let me put this away, it's too dense. It's meant to be like a conversation between me and the patient, telling them, this is what I wish I could tell every patient, so that you know what you need to do, that you feel empowered to be able to do what you can to take care of your sight. And so the way that the book is laid out, there's sections. So the first section is my best pearls or my best ways to explain glaucoma, what glaucoma is, what does it look like, in ways that they can understand. So many pictures. Why should you care about glaucoma? Who's at risk? And what should you be expecting? How often should you get checked? Certain questions that they should know, or certain answers to questions that you know that create a certain foundation of glaucoma that can help them to say, okay, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. And then the second section is advice, 12 pieces of solid advice, real world advice, that these are things that you should know. Guess what? You need to know that if your doctor cancels your appointment and doesn't call you back to reschedule, it doesn't mean that they don't want you to ever come back in. You still need to get seen. The world is not perfect, and sometimes things fall through the cracks. You don't want to fall through the cracks. They're your eyes. You need to take care of them. These are things, real world things, that I want people to know so that they can feel empowered and be their best advocate. And then the third section is, because I know that glaucoma is not always a disease that's easy for people because they feel alone and they need support. So I got 5 of my glaucoma patients to tell their story and from their perspective, so that it can provide real world normalcy and things of encouragement or advice, talk about their challenges and then also their triumphs. So the patients who read that section can feel supported. And then the last section is resources. These are practical guides and areas to go when you're ready for a deeper dive. How do you find a good glaucoma specialist? How do you put your drops in? How do you not put your drops in? There's a guide for caregivers, how to be a good caregiver, in addition to other resources, even apps that people can use to help when they're ready to take a deeper dive and get more information. A patient told me she's not an avid reader, but she read the book in 2 days. So it's not something that's meant to be dense, but she said that I want to put it on my shelf because I want to be able to go back to it. So it's also a reference book too. And I see it as a tool for doctors because I know we don't have time. That's why I wrote it. I don't have time to talk to my patients about everything in that book, but I put it there together so that I can tell them about it. And when they read it, they can feel enlightened and then feel empowered and feel ready to take action and say, now I feel like I can take better control of my disease because I feel like I know what to do. And that helps us because it enriches our doctor-patient communication. And when they feel that you've given them something that empowers them, they're going to come back feeling more trusting, more excited to do what you feel is good for them because they feel like you're taking time to give this information to help them. So I feel like it's something that is a great tool for providers as well.
That sounds great. I want to read it. I'll have to order a few and have some handy. I think that sounds pretty comprehensive. And I like that it has resources built into it as well.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon. And then it's also available through the website, theglaucomaguidebook.com.
Great. Well, thank you again for coming on. And thank you for being such a great resource. And we'll look forward to putting these things into practice right away.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, and happy Glaucoma, World Glaucoma Week.
Yes. Happy World Glaucoma Week.
The opinions expressed by the physicians in this podcast are solely the personal opinions of the providers and do not represent EyeCare Partners policy.